The following is a Laura Flanders Show minicast.
Long before Occupy Wall Street sucked it to the American financial system, activists were trying to figure out how to get capital to people and places the banks don't tend to help. With roots in the civil rights, anti-poverty, and other progressive movements, they formed nonprofit loan funds, credit unions, and even a new bank. Organizations that became known as Community Development Financial Institutions, or CDFIs. Fast forward to today, and the Trump administration has twice tried to zero out federal funding for them, but failed. Joining us now to explain just how CDFIs make a difference, from the inner city to the reservation, is Clifford Rosenthal, an internationally recognized developer of programs to provide financial access for the unbanked. He's also the author of a new book, Democratizing Finance, Origins of the Community Development Financial Institutions Movement. It's quite a mouthful there, Clifford. Welcome.
It is indeed, yes.
CDFIs. I mean, thank heavens for your book, because the acronym alone would not get people excited.
Absolutely.
But it's kind of an exciting story that goes right back to the origins of the states.
Yeah. The inequities of the financial system are pretty glaring. And certainly for those of us who've worked for the decades on it, we began to develop creative alternatives to these. I mean, we started from the premise that the poor were not unworthy of accessing credit, and poor communities needed capital as well. The banks were not doing the job. So how could we build institutions that could meet that need?
But you weren't the first. Ben Franklin was out there doing it.
Ben Franklin, yes. I mean, in his spare time after inventing electricity, the postal system, ambassador to France, he also invented the internet, which is not very well known. But specifically...
Sounds like another show.
Yeah, it really. In his last will and testament, left sums of money to establish micro-lending loan funds for artisans who, like himself, were poor and had no leg up in terms of having startup capital. And those funds existed for 200 years.
Talk about what the CDFIs do now. They're active in the inner city, on Native American reservations. How?
Well, they provide a variety of loan products, and CDFIs come in various forms. There are community development banks, community development credit unions, and both of those categories are federally insured depositories, and they provide retail financial services as well as loans. There are nonprofit community development loan funds as well, which mostly are oriented to project finance, financing housing, small business, sometimes cooperatives in low-income, urban, and rural areas. And there are community development venture capital funds as well, which also invest in job-creating enterprises. So they really, depending on the particular type of institution, there are a variety of products available and a variety of orientations.
And how many of them depend on money from outside, like the federal government or venture capital from outside? And how many, or maybe I'm not asking a how many question as much as, could you clarify that some take money from outside, but a lot of them pool money that does exist, even in poor communities?
That's correct. And really, that's the basic concept of credit unions. Credit unions have a history really going back to mid-19th century Germany, but in the U.S. specifically to the early 20th century. And the concept is pure and simple. We pool our money, we loan to each other, we bear the risk of that. So those credit unions specifically, they're democratically controlled and governed institutions, and they're based on pooled capital. The nonprofit loan funds very often basically get their balance sheets together through a combination of public and private philanthropic money as well. And the venture capital funds would, though they have a community development orientation, like other venture capital funds, would go to investors that have substantial amounts to invest.
And the federal piece of this is clearly fairly resilient. I mean, the Trump administration would have done away with CDFIs if they could, but they couldn't.
Exactly right. And I think that's one of the remarkable political accomplishments of this movement, and particularly this CDFI fund under the Department of Treasury, which is now about 22 years old. It began and survived in its early years amid a very partisan battle that came from Newt Gingrich's Republican Revolution, managed to survive that and has done very well for 20 years. So consequently, by the time Mr. Trump took office, there was very strong bipartisan support in Congress for this, and they've basically...
Wait, did I hear the phrase, very strong bipartisan support?
Yeah, rather remarkable, isn't it? I think that it is a bit of a unicorn in public policy at this point, and they have, both of the houses of Congress have voted appropriations that are just about at the historic peak of appropriations for this federal fund.
So this is partly why we wanted to talk to you about this. I mean, you have not written 400 plus pages on CDFIs because this is a boring ho-hum story.
I hope so.
This is important to you, and yes, it's clearly important to legislators if they can come together on this when they can come together on almost nothing else. Why? Why are you so juiced up about CDFIs, and why dedicate the beautiful time you have to produce this account?
Well, I think it basically, for me, I guess my whole career has been based on trying to essentially facilitate empowerment for low-income and minority communities. I mean, that's I've done it with credit unions, and before that I did it with food cooperatives or Native American and migrant farm worker organizations as well. So for me, I can't remember when I wasn't juiced up about this. But why do I think it's important? Well, why do I think it's been viable?
Yeah.
I think because it's not perceived as a handout program, that the viability of this program depends upon the recipients of capital going out and raising additional money and not perpetuating a kind of dependence on federal scale, federal money, and particularly on large-scale federal money. Yeah. Because this is not a huge program.
Sure.
This depends on leverage of additional resources.
It speaks to the power of money in our society, that it is seen as something for which we must subjugate ourselves in every minute of the day. In this story, you're showing how people actually can gather the money that they need to be the captains of their own business ship, their own enterprise ship, and communities can.
Yes.
In a way that is very empowering, I think.
I think that is the point of it. And what is totally unique to my experience of this particular program and this particular phenomenon is that the federal government was providing capital, equity capital, net worth, that's the basis for building an institution. In other words, this is not programmatically designated, funds that we're giving you this money and you're to do only this and only that and under our timetable. So it's equity capital, which is essential in building any financial institution. That has been used to build the balance sheets, to leverage additional money.
So you're sort of saying it's a model of the federal government saying, here's some funding, but you decide what
to do. You decide. Precisely so. And there is something empowering about that for communities, that they get to set the agenda.
So what's the next level of all of this? I mean, we interviewed Jessica Gordon-Nempart years ago around collective courage, and the story that you're telling has a parallel, and you tell some of the chapters in this book, in the Black community specifically, some of the least empowered people, least wealthy people in the world, certainly in the United States, figuring out how to support one another, even under slavery, but certainly through Reconstruction, Jim Crow, and right up to the present day. What's the next chapter of this story as you see it?
Well, I think that, first of all, the CDFI field is a dynamic and growing one, and we see additional institutions formed, though some of those, but also are repurposing themselves, which to me represents a route to scale, that you have some established institutions that are either rediscovering their roots or refocusing on these communities. That's some of my basis for optimism that this may achieve scale. I guess the other thing is that I think every generation finds its own path toward cooperativism as a way to aggregate resources. For me, my initial involvement was cooperatives as a mean to address the food crisis of the 1970s. One of the most very interesting and exciting initiatives, I think, is in North Minneapolis, where a group of people in the Black community, in the wake of killings of Black unarmed civilians, are in the process of organizing a credit union, that they recognize that economic empowerment is very essential and concomitant of political empowerment.
Beautiful. Thank you so much. Clifford Rosenthal's book is Democratizing Finance, The Origins of the Community Development Financial Institutions Movement. And you can get more information about his work and his book at our website. That's www.lauraflanders.org. Thanks.